dispensed. In chapters 4 and 5, you see a scene of worship. In chapter 6, you see a scene of wrath. Now, in chapter 5, we were introduced to a scroll or a book that was sealed with 7 seals. In chapter 6, we see that scroll being unrolled in the breaking of those 7 seals. Now, this scroll is the title deed to the earth, that which was forfeited and lost during the Garden of Eden. We talked about this some last week, but it's been taken back by the Lord Jesus. In chapter 6, we see the Lord beginning the process to take back what is rightfully His already. In the 7 seals, we see the first of a trilogy of 7 things. 7 seals, 7 trumpets, 7 bowls. We're going to follow that as the text rolls on in the days that are ahead. You don't want to miss a whole lot of these in order to kind of stay with me. Chapter 6 through 19. Chapter 6 through chapter 19. Not verses 6 through 19, because there is no verse 19 in this chapter. Chapter 6 through 19 deals with a period of 7 years. We know that period of time as the Great Tribulation. Now, it's divided in half with a particular emphasis on the first 3.5 years and a particular emphasis on the second 3.5 years. If you want to be precise, the first 3.5 years is called the tribulation period. The second part is called the Great Tribulation. So it's, if you want to be specific about that. What that means is things continue to get worse in intensity as the wrath of God continues to get worse and worse and worse and worse. Not that it's good the first 3.5, but it's just really, really bad the second 3.5, okay? And so, and the Bible describes this in several places and several passages. I just want you to listen. Don't try to chase me down and follow all this. Just listen for just a second. It's in the notes, and I don't think it is. It's not in the notes, is it? It's not on the screens. All this scripture. It's not in there. Okay. Cindy's doing helping us with some of the slides with some of the scriptures. Just a lot to do, and there's a lot here. But Jeremiah 30, verse 7 says, "Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it, and is the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it." Daniel 12, 1 says, "At that time Michael shall stand up, and the great prince who stands over the sons of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book." So the people who are written in the book are delivered from all this, okay? My name's in the book. If your name's in the book, we're good. I mean, he gives this to us for information because he says it's helpful to us. But if your name's in the book, you miss all this. You're delivered from all this. That's what he said in the Bible. Now, listen to what Jesus said in the New Testament. "As he who sat on the Mount of Olives, disciples came to him privately, saying, 'Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming at the end of the age?' And Jesus answered unto them and said, 'Take heed that no man deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. And you will hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. And all these are the beginning of sorrows. Then they will deliver you up into tribulation and kill you and be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as witness to all the nations. And then the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house, and let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those days who are pregnant, to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation such as not seen since the beginning of the world until this time. No, nor ever shall be. Unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Then if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or there, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Now, when you look at these first seven seals, the first four involve the first 3.5 years of the book of the tribulation period. The fifth one stretches into the first and the second, to the first and second time periods of that, the first 3.5 and the second 3.5, and the second 3.5 years as well. There are four seals which are uniquely symbolized by four horsemen, which are commonly called the four horsemen of the apocalypse. You've heard that phrase probably off and on for years. Tonight, I want us to study and try to help understand these first four horsemen that are mentioned here in our text. And it gives us an idea. In verse 1, we read, now I saw, look at what he says, when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a loud voice like thunder, come and see. The voice like thunder. Now, we live in the South. We live in North Carolina. Our weather is fickle. I mean, last week we had shorts and looked like it was summertime outside, and this week we're all getting our winter clothes back out. Cindy's probably got a fire going in her house right now. Dwayne won't let her, but she's trying. She's trying to talk to me. But this time of the year, though, it's not so much this time, but just in a few weeks from now, though, when you hear thunder off in a distance, you know that a storm's coming. Ladies and gentlemen, every time he says, you come and see, and there's thunder, there's a storm coming. It's fitting to get bad. You know what I'm saying? When you hear that thunder and lightning, for most folks who have some sanity about themselves, that normally here for us is to take cover, to get inside where it's safe. The trouble is here, there will be no safety here if you're not a child of God. This is going to be a bad time here on the earth. Well, the storm's about to descend, and it's just to get bad, and the Lord's just to do some bad stuff. I want you to notice with me four thoughts tonight, if we can. First of all, the white horse, the horseman of deception. The white horseman of deception, verse 2. And I looked, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. Now, class, who is this person on this white horse? Come on now, this is dialogue here. Who is this? Who is it? Who do you think? Yes, it's Santa Christ. That's right. There are some folks who have said this is Jesus, but I don't think that does the text right. And I'll tell you why that is for several reasons. But there are some similarities between the Antichrist here in chapter 6 and Jesus in chapter 19. But this horseman is not the Lord Jesus. It is Jesus that broke the seal in verse 1. Therefore, he would not be the rider. There are some other similarities, but there are some very specific differences as well. The crown that this rider wears is different from the crown that the Lord Jesus wears. This crown is described by that's worn by the rider of the white horse as the Greek word Stephanos, which is a Greek word for it's given as a crown, which is as a prize. It's different than one Jesus has in Revelation chapter 19, verse 2, where he says his eyes were like a flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns. And he had a name written on it that no one knew but himself. That word's the Greek word diadems, which speaks of a royal crown. It's a crown that is inherited because of the person who he is, not a crown that has been won or received. This crown here for the Antichrist, as we've called him, is a crown that was given to him. Now, his crown was given him by others. It was a crown that had been won. He hadn't done anything to earn this crown. It was just given to him. That's what the text says. Jesus didn't win his crown. He did not win his crown because he was victorious. His crown was not because of something he won, but as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, he got his by virtue of who he was. All right? Now, there's another difference too. You notice here in this text that he's carrying a bow. Now, I'm not a hunter. All the deers are safe, as far as I'm concerned. Now, the Smith boys and Travis, those fellows are professional hunters. But now there's something unique about this. Bows not very good unless you got some arrows, are they? Are they? There's no mention of any arrows or any weaponry there. It just says he has a bow. He comes riding that white horse as he's trying to be a counterfeit Christ. He promotes himself as Christ, and we're going to learn more about that as the writer in later studies. But the Bible describes him as a world leader, and he's going to. He's going to proclaim himself as the promised Messiah. During the tribulation period, he's going to step into this stage and he's going to play a leading role in the end time events. But he's not going to actually do that by force. He's going to do that by a slick tongue. He's just got a bow. He don't have any arrows. Now, notice with me, first of all, the accomplishments of the writer. And he went out conquering and to conquer. Now, we know that the Antichrist is going to rise to a place of power and rule. He's going to rise to a place of worldwide leadership. The fact is that his crown is given to him. It indicates that his leadership in the world is one that was given to him or granted to him by other world leaders of the world. He will be made the leader of the world by the leaders of the world. He will be handed world domination. Now, preacher, why would they do that? Well, think about this. Now, you have millions of people that have been snatched out of the world. There's airplanes that were flown by Christian pilots that have now crashed. There's cars that were driven by Christian people that have now wrecked. And there's Christian doctors who were doing surgeries that have been pulled out. Christian attorneys, if there is such, have been pulled out of courtrooms. Christian ball players. It's just, my point is this, just the mass chaos in the world. And there's chaos everywhere. And all these people are suddenly gone. And the police officers are gone that were Christian. And the church folks aren't there anymore to bring some chaos. And all you've got left is society's worst element. Then this man comes on the scene and he begins to bring peace. And, well, you know, the old boy over here, he's wicked and lost, but they'll listen to me. And he brings peace to here and he brings peace to there. And he begins to give all this stuff. There's no weapon there. There's no arrows. There's no arrow or arrows. The indication he's going to conquer without bloodshed. He's going to rise to power without firing a shot. He's going to provide a remedy for all the world's problems during that time as ushering in a time of international peace. Do you understand that our world tonight is constantly seeking after peace? Every time that there's a new Secretary of State, no matter which political party is in power, Republican or Democrat, they always keep talking about, well, if we can bring peace to the Middle East. Ladies and gentlemen, those folks have been fighting over there since when Cain killed Abel. I mean, it's been that long. And I'm not being funny. I'm being serious. They've been fighting for years. That didn't start last week. I mean, they've been fighting over there for hundreds and hundreds of years. Do you understand that those Muslim nations around Israel have always hated Israel? Iraq, Iran, we know them better in Bible terms as Babylon and Persia. Those people have always hated the people of God. That's not a new phenomenon. That's always been the case. Why do you think that God told Abraham early on that those folks who bless you, I'll bless. Those folks who curse you, I'm going to curse. He knew there'd be folks cursing them. It's always been that way. Well, Daniel gives us this picture in Daniel chapter 9, verse 27. Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. The Antichrist is going to lead the world into a peace agreement with Israel. Now, do you think that it's a coincidence tonight that the majority of the unrest around the world is centered around the nation of Israel? I'm not a biblical scholar. I'm not a prophet. I don't know a whole lot. But I personally believe that God is setting the stage for Jesus to come back and to rapture the church away. And all the chaos that's taking place in our nation is God's just working everything out in order to bring everything to an appropriate close. That Israel's hated by the Muslim world. And this very hour, they would love no more than to to bomb Israel and wipe it off the face of the earth. What's scary is, and this might get me in trouble with some folks, up until now, this current administration, every administration we've ever had in the U.S., no matter what political party they were, understood that the United States needed to have Israel as a companion, as an ally. We have turned our back on the nation that God has blessed. And ladies and gentlemen, we are treading on dangerous ground as a nation. And I'm not sure what's going to happen to our nation if we continue to go down the path we're going, in particular in regards to Israel. You leave here upset with me if you want to, but that's the gospel truth. The president and the secretary of state could not be more wrong about that issue. He's wrong about a lot of issues, but he couldn't even be more wrong about that one. The Antichrist will be a person who will actually create a peace agreement that was going to bring a period of peace into the world, albeit short-lived. That's one of his accomplishments. That's the accomplishments of the writer. But I see secondly, though, the appointment of the writer. Now, the accomplishment of peace makes him conqueror or leader of the world. It's for that reason he's made the leader of the world and the nations of the world. He's given a crown, the text that tells us right there. He was given a crown, and the stage has been set for in our world for a person just like this. This world is desperate for someone who can promise peace and bring peace to the world. Arnold Toynbee said many years ago, we are ripe for someone who could promise to give peace and to give tranquility on the earth. We will deify that individual if he comes, won't we? I mean, if there was somebody come in the Middle East and get all that bunch to pull together and just be at peace with Israel for right now, wouldn't we deify them? I personally don't think, I've heard some folks say that the president's the Antichrist. I don't believe that. His approval ratings aren't high enough. And I'm serious. He's going to have, everybody's going to approve of him. I'm not so sure he's not been born already. Now, some folks are saying in their minds maybe tonight, you're saying to yourself back there where you're at. Now, preacher, that's impossible for a person like that to rise to such power. It's happened before, though. You'll remember a man by the name of Adolf Hitler. Justin can tell you what I'm supposed to tell you is the gospel truth on a much smaller scale. He outlined in detail his plans for the conquest in his book, Mein Kampf. If I'm not saying that right, Justin can correct me after church. It was published more than a decade before World War II began. It's really interesting. The Western Allies persisted in believing Hitler's false claim to be a man of peace, though. They stood idly by as he reoccupied the Rhineland, that was demilitarized after World War I, thus ignoring the Versailles Treaty. Then he annexed Austria, the Sudetenland, the Czechoslovakia, and the British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain met with Hitler at Munich in 1938. Upon his return to England, Chamberlain triumphantly waved a piece of paper that contained a pledge of peace from Adolf Hitler and said he wouldn't do anything to the rest of the world. Winston Churchill rose in the House of Commons to declare that England that suffered a total unmitigated defeat. He was shouted down by angry members of his own parliament. The deception was nearly universal. Only after Hitler invaded Poland in 1939 did the Allies acknowledge the truth about what he was actually doing. By that time, though, it was too late. The world was engulfed in the World War II. By the way, we're losing our greatest generation right now. Every day that goes by, we lose more of that great generation that fought there and actually helped make our country great. The Antichrist is going to do the same thing, but he's going to do it on a worldwide scale. And by the time, the trouble is that God's people at this point are pulled out. And they're not here to say he's a liar and a thief and a cheat. The world is ripe for this person to step on center stage. Let me give you a second thought, though. The white horseman of deception, but I said secondly, the red horse of dissension. With the breaking of the second seal, we read in verses 3 and 4, when he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, come and see. And another horse, fiery red, went out, and he was granted to the one who set on it to take peace from the earth, and the people should kill one another, and there was given to him a great sword. Now that peace that the Antichrist brought has been short-lived. Now, red is the color of fire and blood. This writer is a writer of deception and war, and he's bringing dissension among all the nations. He's going to do two things as well. First of all, I notice here with me the conditions that are shattered. Now, when he talks about peace there in verse 4, he's going to take peace from the earth. Now, he's talking about a worldwide peace. At this point, there's a worldwide peace, but he's coming, he's going to take that away. Now, I personally believe he's just talking about the same person, the same Antichrist. He's just changing who he is now. He's just actually showing his true colors. To start with, he come in as a person of peace, and I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to help you. My intentions are good, you see. But now, after he's got you hooked in, it's kind of like fishing, you know. You set the hook, you know. It's kind of, me and Cindy agree about this. We don't like to go fishing. We like to catch fish. There is a difference, you know. He's not going to just go fishing. He's going to catch fish. Fishing's boring. Catching fish is exciting. Now, the conditions that are shattered in the world is going to be thrust into a global war again. Jesus spoke about that in Matthew 24, verses 6 and 7. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not troubled, for all these things much come to pass. But the end is not yet, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in various places. The peace that was initially enjoyed will be quickly taken away because he never was about peace to start with. Okay? The conditions that are shattered by secondly, the conflict that has started. Again, we're still in verse 4. And there was given to him a great sword. The word sword there refers to a short stabbing sword used by the Roman soldier in battle. The word great there is described to the extent of his war. He's going to be able to rise to power and do what else no one else has been able to do is bring peace to the Middle East. He's going to pose as Israel's protector and their defender, but shortly thereafter, he's established himself as the world leader. His true colors will show through, and he's going to attempt to dominate the world as a dictator, setting off worldwide conflict that will last throughout the rest of the tribulation period. This is just going to get started here. This is not going to stop for the rest of the tribulation period. It gets worse. Every time there's another seal open, another bowl open, another vial open, it gets worse and worse and worse. In Daniel chapter 8, verse 24, we read, "And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully, and shall prosper and thrive, and he shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people." There'll be some people saved during the tribulation. He'll kill them off too. He'll be a mighty leader energized by Satan himself. He will war against the leaders of the world and especially against the nation of Israel. He hates Israel. Satan's always hated Israel. You know why he hates them so bad? Because the Son of God came through Israel. Well, let me give you a third thought here, though. The white horse of deception, the red horse of dissension. But I see, thirdly, the black horse of deprivation. Verse 5. "And when he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, 'Come and see.' So I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hands. And I heard a voice in the midst of the fourth living creature saying, 'A quart of wheat for a denarius, and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and the wine.'" The preacher, what in the world is he talking about? Black is associated in the Bible with famine. This worldwide war, will result in a worldwide famine. Listen to what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 24, verse 7 again. "For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines." I think the Bible describes two conditions that exist here. First of all, extreme conditions. You see in verse 5, he has a pair of scales in his hand. The picture is that of rationing food during a famine. People will be standing in food lines, long food lines, because of the scarcity of food that exists or is available during this tribulation period. Now, I'm not old enough to remember this, because some of you may be, but I have read about the rationing of food during World War II. After Roosevelt declared war, the need for war materials increased and consumer goods took a backseat to the military production. Rationing began on such things as meat, cheese, canned goods, sugar, butter, shoes, and even gasoline. The typical allocation of sugar was 12 ounces per week. Some of us would starve to death. Coffee had an allowance of 1 pound for a 5-week period. Some of y'all would really be in trouble. One pair of shoes was the norm between February 1943 and October 1945. I think we ought to go back to that myself, ladies. Ain't a woman here and got a... how many shoes do y'all we own at our house, Elizabeth? Oh, my goodness. Thousands. That's right. In order to purchase food during that time, a point system was created. Ration books were distributed. Each coupon in the ration book entitled its owner to buy a specific number of gallons of gasoline, 3 gallons per week. Once all the coupons were used, no more gasoline could be purchased until the beginning of the next designated period. And during the tribulation period, those kind of conditions will exist again, except you'll be under, the folks who are here will be under the rule of the Antichrist, and he will control them. It's terrible. They're extreme conditions, but they're expensive conditions. Look here. We're still in verse 5 and 6. And I heard a voice in the midst, I'm reading verse 6, of the four creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a denarius, and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and the wine. Now, barley is a cheap form of wheat, mostly used for livestock, and John explains how a small portion will cost a penny. Now, we don't need to think about that in a penny in our penny's terms, because that wouldn't be right in the way the narrative of our text reads. That's not what he's talking about. The word speaks of a denarius, which would be represented by one day's wages for an average worker. Food at that point would become very expensive, and that's if you can find food to buy. Because it's going to be rationed, and the Antichrist is going to make sure that folks only get what he wants them to have. It's a means of control, you see. That's why sometimes we get frustrated in our world about some of the things that takes place, and I get frustrated too about some of the things we do and some of the policies that are enacted in the name, and some of those rights we've always had are taken away. What's happening is I believe that when all those things are taken away, they're just getting folks more and more used to being controlled by government. Do you honestly think that the God of heaven sitting in heaven scratching his head saying, I wonder how that happened? Boy, I didn't see that one coming in there. As bad as we didn't like the Lawrence ruling in Texas a few years ago when they struck down the sodomy laws in Texas, I don't believe that God got up the next day and said, boy, I didn't see that one coming. Boy, that caught me by shock. You think that happened, Dwayne? No, God knew all that. And God's putting all this together. And no matter what happens, I still believe that God's hands are on the steering wheel and he's controlling all this stuff. And he's going to bring everything to an appropriate close. Now, with that said, he says, do not harm the oil and the wine. It's describing basic food staples that will be priceless luxuries, that will be protected carefully. The days of running to Walmart will be over. That may not be a bad thing to start now. Elizabeth said last night, we just need to go to Walmart and pick up a few things. Oh, the men are laughing. The women don't think it's funny. Just why are you laughing, son? I'll get you in trouble. I'll throw you right under the bus. But... back to text. Do you understand that those few things that we picked up cost $185 last night? Just a few stuff. Now, here's the truth there ain't much in there to eat's good. If it tastes real good, we don't have none of that at our house. But it's expensive conditions. And back to the text, seriously. He'll control the food. He'll decide how much food you can have. And when people get hungry, they'll do foolish and crazy things. You talk about chaos. The fact of the matter is, it's going to be awful. Number four, the pale horse of death. Verse 7. When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, "Come and see." So I looked and behold a pale horse, and the name on him who sat on it was death, and Hades followed with him. And power was given to them over a fourth of the earth. Pay attention to that. That's a lot. To kill with sword, with hunger, and with death, and by the beast of the earth. Now this isn't Clint Eastwood's Pale Rider. The word pale there means ashen. We get our words chlorophyll and chlorine from the word, which refers to a sticky, pale, yellow-green color. The rider is clearly identified as death. The world wide events are going to lead to widespread death. Now look here. Notice with me, first of all, the population death effects. Right there in the text. And power was given them over a fourth of the earth. Now, Google's a lot of help to you when you study the Bible. I Google this, and if it's not right, y'all can fix me after church. According to Google, when you Google the population of the earth, right now there's around 7 billion people that live on the earth. Now, for our conversation tonight, this is going to work, but I'm aware at this point the church has been raptured out, so that's going to make that less. I understand that. But for the conversation tonight, that puts today's numbers that the Antichrist would be able to kill 1.75 billion people on the earth during this time. Now, it was terrible yesterday what took place in Nepal. By the way, Southern Baptists are already on the ground. They're doing work. Cooperative program dollars hard at work there. That's really a good thing. Can you imagine, though, 1.75 billion people, listen to me now, that are lost without God, that will spend eternity separated from God in hell, that will die during this time. The church has been raptured. Do you understand tonight, ladies and gentlemen, hear what I'm saying to you, that Satan's ultimate goal is to take you to hell. He doesn't care if you go the dirty route or the clean route, just so the end result is hell. And these 1.75 billion people will die and spend eternity separated from God in hell. That's a lot of people. The population death effects. Let me give you a second thought, though. The procedure death adopts. And power is given them over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword, with hunger, with death, and by the beast of the earth. Sword speaks of war. There's going to be wars, rumors of wars. There's going to be folks fighting against each other. They've been doing it over there in our world for years. Hunger, which indicates there are many folks are going to die of starvation. That was an awful way to die. Remember, the Antichrist is controlling the food. The word death there, it refers to disease as the cause of death. Many folks are going to die from various kinds of diseases. It's interesting to me, during times of war, this was fascinating as I read about this, disease has killed more people during times of war than war itself. Did y'all know that? During the Civil War, for instance, more soldiers died from disease than were killed in battle. During the great influenza epidemic of 1918 and 1919, 30 million people died, more than three times the estimated 8.5 million soldiers who died in World War I. Disease is going to be one of the great instruments of this pale rider, pale horse. Beast will also be one of the methods in which he bring death upon the earth. Many believe this is a reference to rats. I'm scared of rats. But you know, the fact is they've been responsible for countless millions of deaths over the years, if you read about it, by eating both food supplies and spreading disease. There's the Black Death of the 14th century, an outbreak of the bubonic plague that wiped out one-third to one-fourth of Europe, which was a rat-borne disease. Now, preacher, that sounds far-fetched. Now, do you honestly believe that's that far-fetched in our day? Now, outside of the fact, the Bible says it's going to happen, and a fourth of the earth's going to die by one of these means, with sword, with hunger, with death, and by the beast of the earth. Whether that's rats or whether that's lions and tigers and bears, that can be debated, but most scholars think he's talking about rats and that type of thing is going to come be an infiltration of them, and the days are coming. This is all during the first 3.5 years of the tribulation period. Now, I'm glad I'm not going to be here for any of this. Doesn't it make you glad you're saved tonight? Tonight, maybe you're not saved though, and maybe you've come and you come and you don't know Jesus, and maybe you need to come trust Jesus before it's everlasting too late. I'm going to invite you to come. I'm not inviting you to respond to me. I'm inviting you to respond to Him. You see,